Hey everybody, welcome to our first 2023 Speakeasy podcast. My name is Kate.
My name is Alan, and we are from the Reverse Thieves podcast and blog. If you have any comments, questions, insults, or
suggestions,
then you should contact us at reversethieves@gmail.com or come to our cool, super awesome Discord channel where you can discuss how shocked you were at the ending of A Witch from Mercury. If for some reason you have never seen a Gundam series before and did not expect, I just find it very interesting, the number of people who were shocked. You could tell by like how long they've been in the Gundam fandom by how shocked they were by the ending of this first half of Gundam The Witch from Mercury.
Well, I do think it has brought in a lot of new fans. Mm-hmm. So this month's episode of The Speakeasy is looking back on 2022, talking about all of our favorites and just wrapping up the year. We like to do it in January just so we can finish up some shows. And, you know, I feel like it's just too much of a rush at the end of the year. And everybody else has put out their lists and whatever. And so I love being late to the party.
Well, I feel like, it gives you some time to reflect.
Yeah.
Because, I remember looking recently at one, list on some generic site that was top anime of 2022, and three-fourths of them were all from the winter season. I'm like, this seems less like...
You mean the fall season?
They were mostly from the fall season. They were basically most of these shows are just shows you just finished up watching, or finishing up. I mean, I guess you could consider some years, that's the pack season. But this just seems more like what I remember recently.
And I have that, too. I think we all have that, right? And I like what you said, Al, that it gives you time to reflect. Because, what's right in front of you is maybe what you're going to think of immediately. But I think the longer I go just in life is, my initial reaction isn't always the right one. So I think it's, I like that we take some time to think about it.
Yeah, it lets you be a little less emotional and more rational, while not being totally divorced from the emotions.
Wow, this already got very philosophical. So before we get into all of our picks, and I definitely want to hear everybody's picks for our categories in the Discord. You know, I'm really excited to hear what everybody else thinks. But first,
it is the Type Moon Minute, and oh boy. We had, not that much news, and I had totally forgotten that there was going to be a Melty Blood stream, literally, I think 2 days after we recorded, and boy, did they drop some information that stirred up the bee's nest, because they announced two new characters for Melty Blood. Unfortunately, they were fake Grand Order characters, which really, really, really annoyed the hardcore Tsukihime fans. Because Tsukihime, Melty Blood is a Tsukihime fighting game. And so they were kind of okay with Saber being added, and she was already there were already grumblings and people being annoyed. And then they added Mash, who's the main character, or the main mascot character of FGO. And that one actually kind of went Saber had already softened the blow. But then when they added when it was just no new Tsukihime characters, no new Melty Blood original characters from the older games, just two Grand Order characters, man, were the old school Tsukihime fans upset. And so they were the Count of Monte Cristo and Ushiwakamaru. And so the Count of Monte Cristo at least has some connection to Tsuhime, because there was, he's a very popular Grand Order character, and so he had like his own spin-off manga about like their take on like the FGO version of the Count of Monte Cristo, and like one of the people that he gets revenge against actually is like there's like a body hopping character, Rao, and like I think like the judge that he gets revenge on is like supposed to be a reincarnation of Rao, so they have a big like magic battle. So at least he was tangential, so like they can have him come back and be like, ah, it's like a rematch against Rao. So he was at least tangentially related. But Ushiwaka Maru has no relation to Tsukihime whatsoever. And it's just clearly she was added because she's a popular Grand Order character who kind of has a skimpy outfit. And man, the Tsukihime fans were not happy. And I think those are the last free DLC characters. No, any other DLC characters are paid. So it was like also insult upon injury that the last two free DLC characters were Fate characters. So yeah, no. I just remember when like Tsukihime Remake came out and Melty Blood Remake came out. It was like for a little while there was like peace between the Tsukihime and Fate fans, and it almost seemed like the Tsukihime fans had gotten over, like I mentioned in like the Typhoon Roundup or the Typhoon Minute before, it was, seemed like there was peace and almost like respect. But that is like, this was like,
this has been broken. Yes. Trust has been broken. Okay, my question from an outside perspective is, shouldn't it have been obvious that that would have been the reaction to, you know, the...
You're not wrong. It's just before this point, anytime they had added a Fate character, they tempered it with a popular Tsuhime character.
Which seems fair.
And so, like, yeah, I don't know what they were thinking, but just dropping two Fate characters, one of which like had a clear Melty Blood connection, the other one was just like J Rando, people like this girl. Like technically, like they tried to bullshit it that like she's supposed to be of Tengu descent, and there's one character who's of Oni descent, and there's like Tengu Oni like rivalry, but like nobody was buying that shit. Even like the Fate fans were like, that's some pretty tenuous garbage there, Typhoon. there was a whole bunch of anniversary news, New Year's news, because there's always a bunch of New Year's stuff. But the thing I thought was most worth noting was that Rasputin, who's been a long-wanted character because he's a pseudo-servant with the original Fate's Day Night villain, Kire, was added to the game. And so he was a very popular New Year's pick. And then they came out with their new first half of the Seventh Lost Belt, which is full of spoilers, so I just won't mention too much about it other than at the end of the month, we're supposed to get the second half and actually like the banner and characters from that. So people are waiting on that, and I'll probably talk about that next month. You know, there was a normal amount of news. There was no Fate Strange Fake, because they were supposed to have the first episode of Fate Strange Fake, which is the light novel series and manga written by the Durura author. And that got pushed back to, I think, summertime.
Whoa, that's significant.
They wanted to, like, they felt like the preview episode was not up to snuff. So they decided to push it back and preview it in the summer. Other than that, there was a bunch of, like, there was, like, a gag manga anime announced and stuff like that. But the big news that everybody was, like, basically, they ended the stream, and then they're like, ah, one surprise thing, which was the reveal of a game that's supposed to come out this year, which is Fate Samurai Remnant, which is mostly new characters. At the very end, we did see Musashi, but it is with it is a game made by the Dynasty Warrior company, so Koei. We didn't see too much gameplay. It was mostly like set in like a medieval Japanese setting, so it's not in the present. Yeah, it's set in like the era of samurai. So, like we see the main dude, like presumably what is his main servant, and then we see Musashi is also in the game, and so we don't, not too many details, more of a, like a teaser for further information. So no real idea of what the gameplay is like, because, you know, people think of them as the Dynasty Warrior companies, but they have made other kinds of games. So is it just going to be a Dynasty Warriors game? Or is it going to be a different kind of game? That's to be seen. It was more like, get hype.
Well, but if it's coming out this year, they must have be pretty far in development.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm just, I'm sure that, like, probably, I would guess, if I had to guess, knowing their schedule, they usually have a smaller Golden Week type moonstream when they usually announce what the collab event for Grand Order is going to be. I could see them using that time to, like, have the first, like, actual trailer or first big information dump before Fate Samurai Remnant. That, if I had to guess a time, it would probably be Golden Week, the Golden Week stream. But at the end of the month, which the physical version of which on the Holy Night comes out, so I will probably also be talking about that next month on the podcast. But other than that, I will see you next month, Type Lunatics.
It is time. It's time for the Reverse Thieves favorite things of 2022. I was like going to call it like the award show or something, but like it's not because I
no one is going to put on the back of their box. Yeah. Listen as top five anime by Reverse Thieves podcast.
Yeah. And also I feel like I make a real point of calling this my favorites or your favorites. I'm not trying to like make the objectively best of list, you know, like
I will say
this has not been voted on by anyone except myself.
I did leave off one or two like things just because I felt like I wanted to draw a little more attention to under. Or well, I'll mention them when we come up to it.
Yeah, I know that you like try to do that. So that's, we both have different methods for doing our lists, and like that's what's important, that we get to talk about what we want to talk about. So I think we're doing some pretty basic categories. Again, would love to hear everybody's picks for these categories on the Discord, and I felt like in previous years we've like gotten really complicated sometimes, and I felt like I just wanted to do like really basic. I feel like this is what's important. It's what my mind can wrap itself around right now. We're gonna start with openings/endings, and I think the way we're gonna handle this is just to go back and forth between me and Al, and we're gonna go from 5 to 1. So I can't call it the least favorite because it's the least most favorite, whatever. I don't know.
We're just going to get better as the list goes on. And that's how you got to put it.
That's how you do it for each category.
So, we're going to start awesome and just get even better each
time. Exactly. Okay. So also, just for fun, Al and I haven't told each other what's on each other's lists. So I think it's always, I always enjoy doing that because I always like hearing where we overlap. We're like, sometimes one of us will be like, oh, I was thinking about putting that on the list, but then I didn't or whatever. So, so let's get started. Opening and ending, number 5.
So I'm going to start with Kickback by Kenshi Yonezu, the first opening to Chainsaw Man. I think that the opening is pretty, it's got like amazing animation. That like, I mean, in general, as much complaints as certain people have about Chainsaw Man and how good an adaptation is, I enjoyed it generally as the series, but like, I've not read the manga, so I don't know if I'm like, man, you're getting the real inferior experience. But like, I think other than a few people with claims about CG, I think everybody agrees that the animation on Chainsaw Man is amazing. And like, I think that what I really felt like it got on this list was like the amount of like thought that has gone into that opening, and like a lot of like the super subtle clues of like, if you know what you're looking for, like, ah, I see what you did there, or ah, I see how you actually like spoiled this thing that only would be like, you would only realize it's a spoiler if you've like watched the series or like, you know, read the original manga. And like, and also it just has a lot of interesting like movie references and like a lot of like timing jokes that you only notice if you like time things out. So I don't know, it's like very well directed and kind of like more subtle than you might think. You just think it's like this over the top, like
movie references.
Yes, Sakugan movie references, but it's actually got like a lot more like nuance to it, which I feel like is like if you're more familiar with the story, I feel like is like a bonus and like a. Just very well made, in my opinion.
I don't remember who I was telling this to, but the song itself for the Chainsaw Man opening, whenever I would be listening to Apple Music, if I was ever listening to any Japanese music, even if it was like completely not at all, like the Chainsaw, yeah, it'd be like, well, no, yeah. But like, even if it was unrelated to like the style of music of the Chainsaw Man opening, it would just like put that into the playlist. And I'm like that's how I feel like that's how many people were playing it. It was just like, of course, this is what you want to listen to.
So it was basically like the Spotify version of Plastic Love. You know about that?
No.
So there's this old City Pop song.
Oh, I know the song.
Oh.
I didn't know what you meant like about the
Spotify. Oh, so apparently, if you like listen to any amount of Japanese music on YouTube, it has a weird tendency of just throwing Plastic Love at you.
I see.
So I was just like, ah, it's the what do you call it? It's the Plastic Love of Spotify. I see. Whatever music program you were using to listen to Japanese music.
Yes. Okay. That is definitely exactly what was happening. Okay. So my number 5 pick is, I was like having to look up to make sure I say it right. So Attack on Titan, the final season, part 2 ending. which is Akuma no Ko by Ai Higuchi. And I think it just, it's, I think the ending stands out mostly because that season of Titan is really difficult to watch.
And uplifting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the ending is absolutely not uplifting. The ending, though, is, like, very soft, I guess, and sad. It's very, it's kind of like the song that makes you think of, like, the beginning when maybe you thought things were going to be good or okay, or, like, when they were kids, you know, like, sort of a, it has, like, a little bit of, like, some of the nostalgia, but also, like, no, this is going to be fucking sad. But it was probably the most uplifting thing about every episode, and it was still fucking sad.
When you stare at the abyss of death itself, what do you call it? Anything that has even a ray of hope is uplifting.
Yes. Yes. So yeah, and it just stuck with me. I had, like, written it down kind of early on in the year, and, like, it just stuck with me. So that's why it's here. I really need Attack on Titan, the final season, the end part 7 or whatever it is going to be, needs to come out really soon so I can be done. Like, I need to close the book on this part of my life.
I need catharsis. Please give me catharsis.
I don't know if we're going to have that, but I at least need it to be over so that I can move on.
My next one is Story by Mayu Mishima, the opening to Uncle from Another World. I just think that, man, if there is a love letter to Sega games, even more than Seiha Girls, it is probably that opening to Uncle from Another World. I mean, I was mostly a Nintendo kid, but, like, even I am like, oh, I get that Sega reference, and oh, I know what that's saying, because, you know, oh, that's obviously Knights, and what do you call it? That's clearly, like, you know, Phantasy Star there, so, like, considering the subject matter and, like, you know, the main character of Uncle from Another World, it would be very disappointing if the opening was not at least steeped somewhat in Sega imagery. But that opening just feels like you liquefied a Dreamcast and threw it on the screen.
Did you get a lot of the references?
I mean, I got enough of them that I could, like the part where he's dancing, I don't know what, like, famous, like, Sega, like, rhythm game that's a reference to, but, like, I got enough of them, like, you know, with the Knights and Phantasy Star references that, like, I, like, could piece together a lot of the other things. And it's just very, like, it's very clear that, like, you know, I feel like a bunch of my openings choices are because, like, there's just, like, this level of, like, love for, like, either the source material or what's being referenced. And I feel like there's just, like, this, I don't know, this just open love of this Sega era. And, like,
no shame.
Yeah, and it's like, we get you, Uncle. We get you.
I think it's interesting. Both the ones you've selected so far are, like, full of references.
Mm-hmm. This may be a running theme.
Oh, interesting. I like it. I like it. I love a theme. My number 4 pick is the final version of the opening to JoJo's Part 6 with all of the extra goodies. And it's Heaven's Falling Down by Sana and Sajo Nohana. And it's also just, like, I mean, the song is obviously great because it's JoJo's opening, but then, like, the ending animation where they've added in all the spoilery stuff. You know all of the connections, you know all the relationships, you know who's alive and who isn't, and like how things went down and whose powers do what and all of it. And as usual, I feel like they just, I really just appreciate that this has become a thing that they do for the JoJo seasons. And because like most of the anime that, you know, most anime openings, it'll change completely. Like it'll be like, we'll have a new opening, or like maybe we'll add in a little thing here or there, like a character that wasn't there before. But I
Pre-Cure
feel like
really does that. Like here's the new cure and we'll put her in a few places.
But I feel like JoJo's, it's so exciting to see them just updating the opening as they go. And it just feels really thoughtful the way that they put everything in there. And like the song is obviously great, but just like such a memorable cast. And so just like it just felt so exciting to see all of that stuff leading into the finale.
Maybe a few tears.
Oh, many tears. I mean, the opening itself already made me kind of feel teary even before they added in all the stuff. So yeah, absolutely.
This is right in the spoiler section. I can't bring anything up.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we already did our spoiler section. But if anybody listens to the spoiler section, they know where the tears came in.
The tears flowed.
I was thinking of putting on it the first JoJo's opening, but I was like, Kate's going to do a JoJo's either opening or ending, so I'm just going to leave that for her.
I have to say, as just an aside, maybe, I don't remember if we talked about this when we talked about the series, but I was really disappointed that the ending never changed, and I just really thought it was kind of a missed opportunity there, and like, the ending was fine, but I really, really thought we would get a different, you know, something later in the series.
It's funny, like my roommate thought like it was one of his favorite end songs. Like he had no connection to the song before, but he's like,
I thought it was a good song.
Yeah, just a good. Yeah, they have changed it before. It seemed like, it did seem like if they were gonna with like the part three of Stone Ocean, they would. If they were going to update the opening, they should have updated the ending as well. But.
And I also felt like I got it. It was like the shores and stuff, but I didn't feel as connected to the series. Like it didn't have any, I don't know. I just like imagery wise too. I just didn't think it was, anyway, it wasn't my favorite.
No, so. Walk like an Egyptian. My third pick was viral sensation Cheeky Cheeky Bon Bon by Queendom, the opening to Your Boy Kong Ming. I don't know, that song is just a banger. And what do you call it? And like the fact that they try to like throw in like rap and modern hip hop with the tactician from the Romance of the Three Kingdoms and his, what do you call it, and his, you know, pet project protege, singer girl is, I don't know, it's just super amusing.
And I think most people who watched it thought they did so successfully, or at least in an entertaining way.
Oh yeah, no, it's amazingly, it's like, well done, and like, it matches up well, and it's just...
Wait. The most unexpected.
Yeah.
Certainly.
And I don't know. I just thought it was, like super well done and just like, kind of like the show, very amusing and, what do you call it? Just a delightful little, like, delightful little, cherry on top to a fun series.
It has a little bit of an earwormy.
Well, because it's based on like, it's based on a popular club mix that was then remixed like twice. And then this is the remix of the remix of the remix. So like, because like the original song was super popular and then the song that sampled it became a hit on its own right. And then I think this is like an interpretation of the...
So it makes sense that it's very catchy. Yeah. Mm.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's even in its like third iteration, it became very popular. Yeah, it's just a fun song.
So my third pick is a dancey little number. It is the Spy Family first ending, which is Kigeki by Gen Hoshino. And all of the Spy, as we all know, all of the Spy Family music is just great. So how do you pick one? But I picked this one mostly because I love the animation of that first ending. I love our trio like dancing, and like it just like kind of like sticks in my mind imagery wise. So that's like sort of why I went with that one. And it just like has like such a I like the way that it highlights them as a family, and maybe that's what it is. I just like I feel like the relationship really comes through, like the sweet part of that relationship, and not just the like hilarious parts of it. And like I said, I thought the animation style is just cool too. So I tried to stick to one Spy Family song, so that's my choice.
Funny you should say that, because I had the same rule, because I picked the second opening.
I mean, I knew Al was going to pick the second opening, even though he's like, I want to highlight things because I am so philosophical. I want to highlight things that people aren't thinking about. But Bump of Chicken just blows all of that out of the window.
Fuck that shit. Like, those rules go out the window once you put in Bump of Chicken.
Which is a
fuck the intellectual stuff. Bump of Chicken always makes banger openings.
So good.
They did it again. And the animation on that second opening is just chef's kiss. Beautiful. If you thought the animation was nice in Chainsaw Man, that's why it's number 5 and Spy Family is number 2. That thing where like Yor is like practicing with her weapons and she catches the one flower on one of her swords. Oh, and just everything. Or like, you know, that scene where like, you know, Lloyd whips out his gun and just like so beautiful. Or any scene where like, because they have like 2 separate scenes of Yor and Anya running, and they're just like on the friggin' ones Disney quality, like, and all just with a just souvenir. It's just, and it's like, and kind of like what you said, it captures like, because the first opening is all about like, the secrets of the family and them kind of like coming together, but everybody knowing that there's like something off. But like Souvenir is kind of like them finally settling in and maybe all of them kind of realizing what they're getting out of this found family. And it's just works so beautifully, so nice, so lovely.
And that song is just so good. It's just it's Bump of Chicken. So like, it's just such a good song.
I mean, it would easily be number 1 if my number 1 wasn't my number 1.
That wasn't mysterious at all. I feel like I have a guess about number 1, but...
You can't guess. You don't know me at all, Kate. You throw out guesses about me and they're always wrong. So be prepared to be wrong again.
I'm ready to be wrong. But first, we got to get to my number 2 pick, which is the second opening from Ranking of Kings, Haruka no Yusha by Vondi. And...
I forgot about Ranking of Kings. I think about the last year's show, but that's a good pick.
And again, I think that series had great music throughout, and I think it had great openings, great endings. So I was, but I like opening two, there's certain lines in it and just where like it lifts me up. It lifts my heart up when I think of it, when I listen to it, and like I feel like it just wraps around that opening wraps around you both in its animation and the song, and it's just like such a great way to start every episode. And it's the type of thing where like even if I could skip it, like I would never skip it because it like gives me such good like warmth when I heard it. So like again, hard to pick with Ranking of Kings, so good, but I think that's where I settled on because it just like it's the one that I feel like is iconic to me, to the series. Mm-hmm. Like this is what I'm associating with it. So all right, number one.
Try to guess, Kate. How? What? Impossible. How could Kate have seen through me like for the millionth time? Yes, my number one pick is Ayu by Maison Des featuring Minami and Sakura Modi. I mean, if you want references, just a tribute to just the entire canon of Urusei Yatsuru. Just a really, once again, an opening, great opening song. Like, it features all the like prominent characters. It like just sums up the Lum Ataru relationship. The fact that it like has pieces of media from the very beginning of the series till today, with you know various covers and iconic scenes, various video games and toys that are in the series, and you know that little sequence where Lum is dancing when she like you know basically substitutes herself for the idol group that Ataru wanted to see. It's just just a perfect love letter. Even the second opening, which is like really like the city pop and kind of like a vaporwave, kind of like super 80s tribute, I couldn't have, even if I wanted to, that I couldn't have picked that one because it started this year, not last year. But even that, and it was really good. The second opening to Lum, second season is really good. But like that first season is just like pitch perfect, excellent. Just like exactly what I would have wanted from this remake, and like so good, so good.
It has a lot of little tiny details, which I think is makes it one of those kinds of openings that's really fun to, especially maybe if you don't know all the, you know, like either even if you do know it, or if you watch it and then can watch it again and you can pick up, but there's just like every tiny detail is really thought about in the background and everything, mm-hmm. which I think is, you know, it's not just like schools and cities or whatever. Yeah. It's like every single thing is like meaningful.
And yeah. And it's like one of those things where like there was a reason that I watched it several times. I'm like, oh, look, you can see like, you know, like, ah, oh, look, Sakura's doing that in the background. They're all, oh, look, like there's that one little thing where if you, you know, you blink and you miss it. About Rand and stuff like that. So it was super fun.
I'm glad that my track record continues to be like 100 out of 100. So my number one, I don't even know if it's number one. I was telling Al before. I was like, I don't know. Is this the right order? I don't know. But anyway, my number one is the opening to Yuri Deco, which is, I cannot say the name of it because it's a very large number. It's got 24 zeros. So one with 24 zeros. So like whatever octillion or whatever, I don't know what number it is. Love by Clambon. And it's, I feel like it really is aligned with like the visuals of the entire show and like the technology. It has the sound of like what that world is. So it like feels like it comes from the actual show, and like the colors, it just, it's very, very visually stylish and, you know, has that Science Saru love on it. And it's a song that, when I was watching the show, if I wasn't watching the show, I was listening to the song like on loop, you know, like throughout the day, until I like, finished it up. So I feel like because I was listening to it so much, I think that's why I kind of put it here at number one. I was like, well, clearly it was like, you know, it was like that kind of song that's like, it's in my head, so I might as well just be listening to it because it's not going to be not in my head. Like, I can't not be thinking about it. So, yeah, so that's sort of where I settled on. I don't know. I could put these in any order. They all had great meaning to each show, and that's what I always look for in an opening. And, of course, cool animation that's relevant, but, like, yeah.
Clearly my number one was going to be my number one as Kate's clearly psychic power.
I probably surprised Al with some of my picks. So we'll see if this trend continues. Maybe I'll be able to predict, but then like I'll be surprising. Or maybe we'll get like go opposite where I'm like super predictable and then Al is like the super surprising one. So we're about to find out. Okay, so moving on to our characters section. So this is where we are picking two of our favorite characters of the year. But I do feel like maybe I was like doing this list and I was like, can we just pick like a family of the year? Because it was really hard to pick. So I didn't actually pick family of the year, but that's kind of what I wanted to do instead of this. But I will go with my male character of the year, which is Boji from Ranking of Kings. And I know, Al, I know you were like, oh, I think of Ranking of Kings as like a 2021 show, but it went into the winter of 2022.
It did.
And I think, I mean, it was strong the whole way, but like, I feel like it ended so strongly that it carried me through the whole year.
Oh, no, I just had forgotten.
I wasn't saying you were like, how dare you choose that. But that, like, I feel like the ending half of it was so powerful. And Boji, I think, if you've seen Ranking of Kings, I don't think that's a surprise at all to pick him. But he's, like, such a unique character. I felt like this is a character who not only is, like, immediately in your heart because of his attitude, but like is just like a unique character that I don't think that we've really seen a lot of in terms of like his temperament and like the way he approaches problems and like the way he sees his duty as like, you know, a king and like what does that mean and like his relationships in the series. I mean, just a unique character that I think is absolutely unforgettable, and just like deeply, deeply in my heart. I am so excited that we are getting another season of Ranking of Kings. Just an unbelievable character, I think.
I feel like if Boji wasn't there, you probably would have picked Lloyd.
Yeah, I mean, Lloyd is like the love of my life. But
I feel like we call it the only reason Lloyd is not there is just because Boji.
That's how good
Boji
is as a character. Kage is also a really good character. Like, it was sort of like, oh, but like, you know, but anyway, yeah, I think I feel like it's him for me, you know, like it's just family of the year. That's why I need a family of the year, Al.
Well, my pick was your boy, Kong Ming. I really liked Zhuge Liang, otherwise known as Kong Ming. I thought he was just such a delightful anachronism.
Makes it work in the past and in the present.
I like how they like use his like strategies from the Three Kingdoms and like reskin them to work for being like a music promoter, or like when when they're trying to get the rap guy to join, how he like challenges him, and then just loses enough to like get the guy's respect, and like it's just like, but enough to like give, but not, but challenges him enough to like get him to like actually feel like he won a battle and like regain his like confidence that he had lost, and like then join the group, and just like other things like that. It's like I don't know, he's like just a delightful version of that character, and just you know, just a fun, funny character that I really thought was makes that show what it is, and just makes it very enjoyable.
Is there going to be more of that series? Or is it like an ongoing thing?
I mean, like, they didn't get to her, like, her dream of, like, having a show at the Tokyo Bowl. So, like, I'm sure, I think the manga's still ongoing, so there could be more. I heard from one of our friends that, like, certain people felt like the numbers were disappointing, especially because Chitty Chitty Bang Bang was such a like viral hit that I think they were, I wouldn't say full snakes on the plane effect, but like people expected, like it seemed more people loved that opening and that song than the show itself, whereas I thought they were both amazingly good. And I know, you know, definitely found this fan in like a part of like anime Twitter and the such, but I'm a little worried that maybe it underperformed.
It is a unique concept.
No, definitely.
I mean, I don't know who I would have predicted, but that is a very interesting pick. So now we've both been, you know, surprising. All right. So my woman of the year was really hard to choose. But it is Anya from Spy Family, of course. And I mean, I don't think I have to explain this to like the universe, because we're all watching Spy Family. We all love Anya.
Like, she is, like, meme city.
Yeah, yeah. And but, like, for once, I feel like I'm in line with, like, the, you know, we talk about that all the time where it's like, oh, are we out of touch or whatever? And I'm like, well, clearly I've still got my my finger on the pulse of fandom occasionally. And I think, you know, Anya is endlessly, like, I have never laughed so hard. You know, her faces are legendary. And of course she has like this super tragic story, but you know what? She's only 4 years old and she's like gonna have a better life from here on out, clearly. And so, yeah, I couldn't think of anybody who was as memorable as Anya for me for 2022.
But Kate, the author doesn't like the character.
That is so the funniest rumor bullshit that I have ever heard. Al and I and a few other people were like having a long conversation about this because it's so silly. And like, I don't want to go into it on here. But, yeah. Like, I can tell everybody my opinion about it, but like at some, you know, other point. But you know, I feel like it's a fundamental misunderstanding about like how collaboration works. So like, Anya, not hated. You heard it here first.
So I put some rules on myself.
Okay, okay.
The second one. So I tried not to pick a character from a previous media that I already like listed as my favorite character. So no Shinobu and Ran, and no Foo Fighters, because I've already basically listed them as my favorite characters in previous iterations of the series they were in. Because I feel like, boy, Alex Shinobu from Love, super surprised.
I definitely wouldn't have thought you, I would have, so here's how well I know Al. I figured you would put this sort of limitation on yourself. Although the Foo Fighters one, I didn't see coming. Because I was like, the Lum one, I think he's going to be like, okay, that's just like low hanging. Like, that's too easy. We've seen it. But I am surprised about Foo Fighters.
Just because I'm like, ugh. Maybe it's just because I've stated to you enough that when you call it, like, sorry Foo Fighters, when you call it, first in my heart, my favorite JoJo's character. But when you call it, you gotta.
Such a good choice. Although, does Foo Fighters identify as a she?
I mean, if you wanted to pick a non-binary, I mean, the
not that the it corpse matters, obviously. That you can
Foo Fighters is
inhabits
this is female. I'm trying to remember if Foo Fighters generally saw itself as non-binary, like actual Foo Fighters, the actual plankton saw itself as non-binary. I think it could be argued if you wanted to pick like non-binary character of the year.
Or just character of the year.
Isn't Fighters.
I just can't remember, you know, in the show, like pronouns and wise, I can't remember.
But I think because it was in the body of the female prisoner, it used female pronouns.
Just, that was just a rant. Anyway, Foo Fighters is not on the table. So, who is it?
So, with those three, my own self, I picked Power from Chainsaw Man because she's just such delightful garbage. Like, she is literally written to be just, like, a, like, self-righteous, like, cowardly, trashy character.
Dipshit.
Yeah, like, she's clearly thinks herself an intellectual and she's clearly a moron. She clearly thinks herself as the most powerful, coolest person, but the minute anytime anything goes bad, she immediately runs away. I just, kind of like what you said about Anya, she's just super memorable of like just putting the pedal to metal to making a character utter trash.
I feel like you don't see that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like she seems unique. Even what because I didn't finish Chainsaw Man, but I watched, you know, like six episodes of it or something. And she definitely stands out as being, especially as a girl character, I feel like, yeah, she is an idiot. and very weird. Like, very, very weird.
So, she stood out to me a lot and we caught. And I didn't want to pick any of the ones I'd, like, previously just given my, like, 100% thumbs up from previous media. So, because, you know, it would just be like, who do I want to pick? Shinobu or Foo Fighters? Let me flip a coin. I wanted to give something that was unique to this year.
I was very torn about possibly picking a JoJo. Like, I was thinking about picking a JoJo's character. You know, like, I considered it. But I was like, and then it was, I'm not even joking when I was like, oh, I just want to pick families. Because it's like, if I could pick families, I'd be like, Spy Family. Everybody, like the whole family, JoJo's, the whole group, like, okay, except Anastasia, fuck that guy. or like, you know, I just want to pick everybody from these things, because like they're so good, whether you're talking about blood relations or found families.
We should say, we should have a group that's a section that's favorite Nakama.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think kind of, because one of the things I'm also, like, very, very into is found families. And, like, that's, like, a huge, been a huge part of like actually all of 2022, like in favorite shows. Like it's just like very interesting how much it comes up in like my favorite characters or my favorite shows or like groups of characters that I see as like a family. Like it comes up a lot. So yeah, I wish we had thought of that, and it'd be like, just, we've done cast before. Mm-hmm. We've been like a favorite ensemble. So I feel like that's where some of these people belong. Is like, how do you choose from the whole group? Who is your couple of the year?
So I just decided to lowball this one, make it easy. I picked Lloyd and Yor. I just think, kind of like we just said, wanted to shout out a little bit of the family connection and Spy Family. I know it aggravates my roommate a lot that like, he's like, it's so clear that they have a connection and it just feels like they're artificially extending it. But I just feel like it's kind of the convention of, I think it's easy to sometimes forget that Spy Family is definitely a sitcom.
And it's a comedy first.
Yeah. I'm accepting that, like, we're probably not going to get major, like, movement of that relationship till pretty much the end game. But I just think they just work well together, and they're just lovely on their own and even more lovely together. And what do you call it, you know?
I feel like, I mean, I think the sort of the end of season two or part two, whatever it is, there was like, you know, a little funny moment but I felt like their connection was highlighted more in the first season, and I didn't feel like we saw it as much in the second season. So like, I'm happy to have more of that, but I think
also season two introduced Interrupting Cowgirl.
Yeah, that part of the story was maybe a little longer than it needed to be. But I think they're a great choice because, I mean, I love them too. I love their connection. I don't feel like it's, at least currently, I don't think it's being elongated unnecessarily, mostly because, you know, I feel like, from our perspective, like, we know what's going on. We understand this. But, like, you know, I'm willing to believe, at least for some extent, not that I don't get annoyed with this. Like, I'm sure I've talked about countless series where you're like, all right, like, let's just get on with it kind of a thing. But I think in here, I don't know. I don't think that they know what each other is thinking, especially because they have explicitly said that they are like not in a real relationship. So like, it's not like one of them thinks they're in a real relationship or whatever. It's like, no, they're both like, this is a business partnership. I'm going to keep it that way, even if I do maybe have some feelings or whatever. So, yeah, they're great. Good choice, Al.
So which isekai is your favorite couple from?
Oh my god. You know, I was having a random conversation. I was like, is it glad to be called isekai if you come from the fantasy world into the regular world? And then I was having a big conversation about that. Anyway, so my couple of the year.
This is actually called reverse isekai.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay, it's not just called isekai.
Yeah, no. When you go from the magical world to the regular world, like in Devil's Apart Tournament, it's called reversed isekai.
Okay. But what does isekai mean?
Isekai means spirit, like spirit away, like spirit to another world.
Okay, but how is that reverse isekai? The devil in Devil's Apart Timer is from that world. He's been spirited away from his world. Isn't it just isekai his perspective?
But in this, yes, technically you were right. In it's the classic, what do you call it? Actually, to me, you're all the aliens kind of thing. But the technical name is reverse isekai when you go from the fantasy land to the mundane world.
Great. Thank you so much for explaining to me.
No problem.
Anyway.
That was Alan's Well Actually for today.
That was the Well Actually segment. All right. So anyway, getting back to the topic at hand, my couple of the year is Nagomu and Kanako from Daimon. Another series with Found Family. But I love that they are technically, they're not a couple currently. I guess you could say that about Lloyd and Yor or whatever, but they're married, so at least that counts. But they're exes. So they were dating when he was a musician and he was in Tokyo, and then they broke up when he decided to come back home to help run the family business. And she ends up kind of not being able to forget him and kind of justifies to herself that she's found a job in Kyoto because she, was looking for a job and just happens to be that he also, that's where he lives now. But, so they reconnect, and I really love in fiction, I'm very into exes getting back together, and anime especially doesn't have that very frequently, because there's a lot of teenagers falling in love for the first time, etc., or your one true love, and all of, so it doesn't come up that much. I feel like it comes up more in Jose stuff, which again doesn't get very much anime, so I definitely wanted to call them out, and I'm definitely rooting for them, and I think that they'll get back together.
They're very pleasant.
Okay, it's time. It's time for animes of the year. Now.
So I was like, all right, I'm going to look up what animes I watched and pick out my best ones or the ones I finished and enjoyed. And then look through the list and start picking stuff. So I went to Wikipedia and I went to anime of 2022, and they had a whole big list. And then I was like, hey, what's this other section? Because it's anime by month all of 2022. And then under it was just people from the anime industry who died in 2022. And then it was divided by month, and then in every month by week.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was just
by
like...
by week?
Yeah, it was basically at least 1 or 2 weeks there was nobody, but it was basically here's, January, week 1, week 2, week 3, week 4. Here's February, week 1.
I do feel vaguely sort of, now that you said it, remember a lot of sharing of news of this voice actor or this singer or this, person.
I mean...
But it, I wouldn't...
The ending of, COVID still going on, the industry just being not the healthiest, not the best thing for your health, and just people dying just as a natural process did not help.
Wow.
But I've just never seen, I can't remember previous years having that, but I don't know if it's new or because 2022 was just that. 2022, but I was the first time I remember seeing it and being on a better note.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I hope that we all can remember them and their work and everything fondly, so maybe that's what these kinds of lists are good for. Okay. Anime of the year, so we're doing top five each. And shit, I have to pick one as five. Al did this beforehand, and I was just like, yeah, sure, I'll just do it on the fly. My number five is, this'll instantly bring us up, I feel like, from what we were just talking about. Because my number five is Delicious Party Precure. So, everybody knows Al and I love Precure, and we're always watching it. But I just feel like Delicious Party Precure is the convergence of so many things that we love. And it's about food, and there are food fairies for every type of food. And it talks about your memories of food and how those like memories are so meaningful, and you get to see them cook lots of food. Everything's food themed. They go to the food kingdom. There's
the cook king.
Yeah, like it's just everything. And also I think it has like some really interesting villains. We don't know fully where that has all, you know, gonna land, and you know, you never know with Precure, like story wise, villain wise, but
and I know one little spoiler where it seems like the big like super villain of the thing has a little more to him going on than because I know, you know, one of your biggest complaints usually about Precure is like when the big boss guy or boss lady or boss thing is just like, I am evil itself, and my motivation is darkness.
Yeah, like destroy everything, which like is fine, you know, but it's more fun when they have like some connection to something. So, and there's like everything in the series, I feel like they just do lots of little food details, and like Pamu, her like hair barrette is like a piece of ham with like a little egg, you know, like it's just like there's just so many details. Amazing. They should be selling that. I will buy it immediately.
And Kate, you forgot the other important thing. It's also got phantom thieves.
Yeah. I mean, it's got everything. It's got so many things that I love, and it's all food. And I feel like you can't watch the show without feeling just like pure delight and also hunger. So you always eat before the show, or you're like, okay, I'm gonna like base my snack off of the episode we're going to watch, or like, oh, I need to have a big dinner plan because if we watch this, I gotta be ready. Like, that's how much it's about food and how like tantalizing all of the food is. So like, just can't go wrong.
No, it's a very good choice. Also, I think it's what do you call it? It's also worth mentioning that it has like a positively gay-coded character as opposed to like a joke gay-coded character, which I think is always like a little Precure showing that it's secretly like the most progressive anime without.
It totally is. Like, because Mari is like also, I think there's been at least there were a couple of episodes pretty early on too where like they explicitly say like, Mari's Mari, and like that's it. Like there's nobody's questioning anything happening, you know, like, which I think is great. Like, just totally normalized. Precure! Thumbs up.
So my number 5 got hit by COVID, but I've been enjoying Uncle from Another World.
Wow, yeah, they are like super delayed, right?
Yeah, like Netflix is like, more episodes coming soon when they do. Because apparently, like 90% of the staff got COVID. Like, one person got it and just... And so, like, basically, it was like... It wasn't, like, a key member. It was, like, who is not had... Doesn't have COVID. It's not only an isekai. It's also a reverse isekai. It's both. Because the main character gets isekai'd, and then it gets reverse isekai'd.
Well, isn't that just... coming back from being isekai? I mean, or do isekai characters not usually come back ever?
Well, usually they only come back if they come back, they come back at the end.
I see. Okay. So it is reverse isekai also. Okay.
And I don't know. I think like it has just the right level of like dark humor. Like just, I don't know. Like, sometimes too dark humor, like, is a little too much for me, but it's just that right level of bright humor and dark humor that that I generally tend to enjoy. And, like, not only, it's a little harem-y at points, which is, like, a little, like, negative point, but I don't know. And what do you call it? Once again, it's also, like, just an interesting love letter and insight into, like, Japanese, specifically not just Sega fandom, but Japanese Sega fandom, which is like apparently different than American Sega fandom.
I guess that shouldn't be too surprising, but it's always interesting to see what those differences are.
Yeah, and what do you call it? So yeah, I just enjoy it, and what do you call it? It's like, it's you know, like look at tropes, but also, and it's also just very clearly just making fun of like a lot of isekai tropes and ideas, and like, I don't know, it's a fun little series.
Yeah. I do like that they, at least at the beginning, that they're trying to make money off of his isekai-ness. Like, I just thought that was like, oh, like, he's going to become a YouTuber or whatever.
I think it's a fun little series.
So it's still, they're still trying to finish up the
first season.
Yeah. My number four pick is Spy Family. It's not higher because, like, I do want to highlight a few other things, but, and I don't feel like I'm not going to talk about it. It's Spy Family. I love it. You love it. We all love it.
It's not one of those shows where you're either watching it and loving it, or like, you either didn't like it or purposely like, all right, this show is being too, like, talked about. I've got to, like, give it time to, like, so, like, I can, like, view it fairly.
Yeah, like, cool off time or whatever, but, like, I am not having that issue, and I'm not going to leave it off the list considering that, like, it was the show that I saved every time we're watching anime. Like, no, we can't watch Spy Family first because then everything else will not, like, I won't be as happy with it. So it's like, it's got to be last. So there's no way I was making this list without it, but I don't think we need to have a long conversation about it.
On a kind of similar note, I just wanted to mention that I really enjoyed Ascendance of a Bookworm Season 3. It's a little lower on the list because this was more of a setup season. Like, there was a little more in... it was a lot more of, like, dealing with mine, like, now kind of being in a weird position of, like, in the church and running the orphanage and like getting involved in politics, and her kind of being like a pseudo noble, like still very clearly a commoner, but having some of the privileges of a noble, and that being in conflict, and her having money because like a lot of her inventions, and her dealing with the you know, the various guild people that she's befriended having money, but that also being like people seeing her as, you know, who are old money, seeing her as being upstart new money. The fact that there's a whole storyline that still hasn't revolved around the evil ink guild, which is what you call it.
Wait until they invent the printing press.
Well, that's why the Gink Guild is so upset, because she's inventing her own inks because she's working on creating a printing press. And so, like, the Ink Guild sees her as a major threat.
They're not wrong. I love the main mundanity of this threat, however.
Oh, yeah, no. It's like, it only in a series of, like, isekai and magic could something so mundane as an ink guild be, like, a prescient threat. And so, like, kind of the last season ends with, like, a big cliffhanger and some major changes to the status quo, which I thought were interesting. It would have been higher on the list, but it did feel like kind of like a setup to get to the big things that happen at the end of the third season. But I still enjoy it. I still think it's a great series that is kind of like a premier isekai. You know, isekai for people who don't like isekai, as, you know, the old joke goes. And still really enjoy that series.
All right, my number three is Orbital Children. So this was a movie / two-part OVA movie, whatever. I remember talking about this and we were like, I don't know. It's like split up, but technically I think it's one thing, but I think it came out in theaters as like two things. Anyway, it's all Netflix, whatever.
But I think it's 4 episodes on Netflix, and I think it had a 4-episode TV release.
Oh my God, okay, I don't know. Yeah, whatever format it is, I'm picking Orbital Children. It's from the creator of Denocoil, which I also watched this year and, you know, recently talked about. And, you know, it, like, I felt like the, whatever, like, metaphysicalness there is to the ending a little bit. I still really enjoyed the kind of the themes, the topics that it's talking about, the very like predicted future and like kind of the way it pulls in things that are happening now and like what the possibilities of those things are. I just feel like it's very like far-seeing. It's that type of science fiction that's like feels like it's predicting things. I really liked the character interactions. I think it has a great setting of like this space station and like the immediacy of what they need to do. And, just like, I felt like the characters are really memorable. They still have stuck with me, especially Jockey, has become a kind of a character in my life a little bit, has come up in multiple things, like, so, like, yeah, I was sort of surprised that it sort of stuck with me as long as it did. I feel like that's probably my pick that maybe is the one that's gone under people's radars just because it wasn't a TV show and it's just a movie on Netflix or whatever, 6 episodes, whatever it is.
Yeah, I want to just elaborate. I think the thing about that's great about Denocoil and Orbital Children is it's one of those pieces of science fiction where it's like, even if the future doesn't turn out to be like this or exactly like this, there's still important lessons to be taken out of it that are applicable to pretty much any future. It's like, all right, this might technology might not go this way, or this societal shift might not go this way. I feel like sometimes some of these warnings only matter if that future comes to pass, but I feel like it's like, this might not be how it goes, but you should still take away the overall message.
Mm. And I think much like Denocoil, I mean, obviously it's hard to say because Orbital Children just came out, but like, I think when I was talking about Denocoil with you, Al, having just watched it, Denocoil is a decade old and it doesn't feel that old. I mean, some of the animation would date it a little bit, but like concept wise and like subject wise, it doesn't it still feels like incredibly relevant. And I kind of feel like that's what Orbital Children may also have, is that like, it's using things that we know about and like taking those to like an interesting conclusion, but like in a way that won't date it.
Well, I mean, on a certain level, isn't Yuri Deco almost proof of that? Like, it's not like a remake or anything, but like, in many ways, one could view Yuri Deco as a, like, 2020s version of Denocoil. So I feel you're right, absolutely right about that. I wanted to, once again, give, for number 3, give it a shout out to your boy Kong Ming! I thought that show was just, like, kind of what I mentioned at the beginning, very unique. Definitely can't be like, oh yeah, it's another series about a Three Kingdoms character who decides to manage the career of a female singer. You know, show number 3 of that type this year. I guess having listened to that whole Romance of the Three Kingdoms podcast, I knew a lot about the character. And then, He's also a character in Fate Grand Order. So I learned a bunch about him from that as well. And I don't know, it's just that interesting take on the character. Like, they have, like, musical rivals who, like, the girl meets when she's, like, trying to, like, level up her skills. She, like, does some street performance and meets a fellow street performer who's actually in their rival band, but they don't, but she's, the other girl's always in costume when she's on stage. They don't, you know, she doesn't recognize her as, you know, the lead singer of this important, you know, this band who's going to be her rival. And they form a friendship, and then they become, you know, betrayal. And they have a shitty manager, or the other band has a shitty manager who's been corrupted by the music industry and forgot what, you know,
music. I thought you were going to say, like, the music gods or whatever, like some, I forgot that there's no, besides Kong Ming being reincarnated, right, or whatever, there's no, like, magic in, yeah, the world or anything.
So, I don't know, it's just a fun series. It's funny, like, you get actually invested in this girl's career, and, you know, I thought it was just a delightful little, like, offbeat series that I was surprised how much I liked it.
Number two for me is one I brought up briefly earlier, Diamon, for my couple of the year. But this is a series, it's like, it's found family.
But actually also real
family. Real family. Well, everybody's a real family, but biological family.
Yeah.
But it's about, you know, this young man who sort of is worried that the family, like, that his father's getting older, and they own this traditional sweets shop. So he decides to go back home and, like, learn the family business. But his parents had taken in this young girl, very young. She's, like, I think 10 or 11. And she's sort of their, like, surrogate granddaughter, because her parents basically abandoned her. And so she is, like, hoping to, she would be the one to take over the sweet shop. And so there's, like, a little bit of rivalry between the two of them, but also, he becomes kind of a father figure to her. And of course they, start to get along, and, there's a bunch of, like, you know, there's the family characters, there's friends, there's the young girl's friends, as well as, like, Nagomu's friends. And it's a very gentle show, but it has, like, forward momentum. It's not quite slice of life. And has some, like, kind of intense drama later in the season when we start dealing with, like, her past and, like, her parents who abandoned her. Like, what are they doing? Like, what's that all about? So, like, it does get a little bit intense later on. But, yeah, it's just, like, another show about food. So got a lot of food stuff going on. But just, like, has a lot of, like, heartwarming. It feels very heartwarming to watch.
All I could think, what I would think is, it's healing anime enough to be heartwarming, but not healing anime enough that it put Kate to sleep.
Yes! Yes, dramatic enough to keep me engaged. And again, like, a little, like, forward momentum. Because sometimes healing anime is very, like, episodic, or can be very episodic. Whereas, like, this is, like, they're healing each other. All right? Everyone's being healed together by being a family. So, yeah. Like, really good show. I think that's that show, I feel like, probably didn't register for a lot of people, so I hope people go back and watch it. I think you'll be really pleasantly surprised. And I really appreciated that, like, it's kind of a father-daughter series, as opposed, like, there's nothing, like, creepy or weird happening. Like, adults are with adults, kids are with kids. It's not a bunny drop situation that we have, like, at least I don't think it is. I mean, I don't think it will be. I have faith. So I feel like as I said, a lot of like found family in my list this season, and this one it was really, really good, and in a surprising way. I didn't know anything about it going in, and was, you know, really fell in love with it.
My number two is Cyberpunk Edgerunners.
Oh, interesting.
Wow,
number two. I still haven't watched it.
I just thought that, what do you call it? I just like that the main studio Trigger team was able to, like, just immerse themselves in the cyberpunk world and really bring out a story that was appropriate for the setting as opposed to appropriate to their style while not compromising their style. I feel like they were able to make a show that, like, felt like a Studio Trigger show, but, like, took, like, the pessimism and, like, cynicism and just, like, object lesson of, like, real, quote-unquote, cyberpunk, and, like, put it in there without not feeling like a Trigger show, but also without not feeling like a proper cyberpunk series. And once again, I feel like the main criticism I heard was, like, it felt very much like a standard cyberpunk story, but I felt like it was a simple meal made well. Like, I feel like it told, like, a classic cyberpunk story excellently, and I would much rather you, like, tell a story properly well than try to be clever and subversive and, like, screw the pooch.
Well, and I think we talked about this when you talked about cyberpunk on the podcast before, but I think it's kind of amusing to me for somebody to say that, because there isn't really that much cyberpunk to begin with. So, like, I feel like we almost think it's more abundant than it is in actuality. And so I feel like,
I think it doesn't hurt that a lot of the really popular late 80s, early 90s titles that kind of came into, like, mainstream popularity were the cyberpunk ones, you know, like Ghost in the Shell and the such. And so it made it seem much more prominent in anime than it actually was. And, you know, that classic of just pure cyberpunk bubblegum price.
My favorite.
But yeah, no, I feel like with Bubblegum Crisis and in Cyber City 8.0 and Ghost in the Shell, it did make it seem like on a certain level, cyberpunk was far more present than it actually was in the genre, in the medium as a whole. But I feel like that idea has persisted even as generally the medium has moved away from that.
All right. I'm going to watch it. I mean, it's not like I'm not watching it because I don't want to or something.
It's just five at the time.
Yeah, but like, I mean, it's Al's number two show and I haven't even seen it. And it's not because it's like just something I wouldn't be interested in. I gotta watch it. Oh, number one. All right. I don't think it should come as any surprise based on like other things that I said in the podcast.
So which Isekai or reverse Isekai is this
one? I think I should be asking you that, Al, because you have three out of your, so far, four were Isekai or reverse Isekai or whatever. My number one is Ranking of Kings. So, I mean, we talked quite a bit about it at the beginning of 2022 when we finished the series, but I think it's just worth reiterating. This is like kind of that moment. I mean, it stuck with me all of 2022, But I feel like it's number one here because I went and reflected, like you were saying, Al, on like the year and like, what did I get out of it? Or like, what, you know, like what was important? And like, that's what it felt really important, especially the end of like that arc of the story and the concepts of like restorative justice and forgiveness and understanding like a fellow human being, or like seeing people as not purely black and white. Just everything that happens as we learn all the characters' histories and like what they've been through and trauma and like all of it. It is like such a thoughtful, unique, smart portrayal of like complex ideas in the most fairy tale, you know, stylization. It's like, you know, makes the medicine go down. Like, yo, you're not expect. I don't feel like you look at that show and expect that that's what you're going to get out of it. I certainly didn't. I mean, I loved the style. It's something that I would enjoy. But like everything that it gives you is like so much more than you could have ever thought. And also dark. Like there, oh man, I still think about moments in that show, like when they're deciding to give like that immortal medicine to like the prince. And it's like, oh my God, like, do we understand what's happening? Like, it's like obscured because of the stylization, but like horrible things are happening in this world. And like the way characters deal with all of that. So it's just unique. It's memorable. It's amazing. Like I said, I am so excited that we just recently got an announcement for another season of it. I'm so thrilled.
I don't remember if you remember, I was like, this is such a, when I was selling it to you, I was like, this is such a Kate show. And I'm glad that was a
number one easily. I feel like it, I don't think anything, even like, I liked all these shows. I liked everything, but like, I don't think anything even comes close to being what it is, like what it is, what it did. I'm so curious what Al's number one is, you guys. I hope you guys are like on the edge of your seat too, because I just like can't figure it out based on everything that we've done.
So I just threw out my rules. Just pick love.
Oh, you're a science, sir. Okay. Whew. All right. It's because Al defied his own rules. Okay, good. Because yes. I was like, normally,
normally, yeah, I would throw it off. But like,
I was expecting you to pick it for like number five, mm-hmm. because, you know, like as you're like, okay, you knew it was going to be on here, but I'm not like, but good for you, Al. Fuck that. You can put it wherever you want. It can be
just,
number one.
I really like this remake. I think like they do it just such a good job, of like restoring the characters. Like I have a few criticisms of like, I really wish they had more Osenmark. I feel like they're underusing Osenmark. He was just always such a good foil. I mentioned this on the Discord. He's always such a good foil, and they've hardly used him enough. But they have plenty of Rand, so like I can overlook that for some reason. Who knows? We'll never know the answer. But like, just the way they stick to the original, but they're doing a little bit of their own stuff. Like, they're definitely playing up how much Ran is hiding, that she's from space, which they kind of quickly dropped in the anime, but I really feel like they're committing to that bit of, like, Ran trying to hide from everybody but them that she's a space alien. Even though her house is UFO and no one seems to fucking question that.
I mean,
because they're love characters.
They're idiots. And also, it's probably one of the less weird things that's happening in town. I don't know. Like,
yeah, I've really been enjoying it. It just makes me remember why I love the original series. They're doing a nice, like, just greatest hits and what do you call it? It's just fun to see these characters again. And I feel like almost all of the characters, they get to voice everybody is like a really good pick. Especially, you know, having the original voice of Otaru play Otaru's dad. And what do you call it? Just reminding me why I love those characters. I love that series. I'm really hoping that it, get some new younger kiddies into seeing why, like, it was Rumiko Takahashi's first big hit. And, you know, just, kind of just a unique place in her overall career. And I just look forward to seeing more of it this year.
Is there any, like, good merch? I feel like there's got to be, like, some great merch.
I should ask Pat, since he's in Japan, if he sees any merch for that. You know, maybe snag me some Shinobu or Rand stuff. And the new opening has Ryunosuke in it, so definitely Ryunosuke is going to be in part two. Although she's only like in one part, she's not she's like super pronounced, so I'm curious. I have a feeling she might not pop up till later in the season.
Okay, I'm going to spring a question on you here.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we've gone through our lists. Is there a show that you haven't watched from 2022 that you're like, I need to go back and watch that? Or like, oh, I want to watch that. Or like, people have talked about this, so I want to watch that.
I'm very curious to go back and watch Yuri Deco. Because you really like sold that series pretty well, and like we were gonna watch it as a group, and then just like real life happened. So I feel like it's like a show that had things been different, I probably would have watched all the way through. So I really feel like I wanna go back and watch all of that. I've heard. Not like Yuri Deco, as I said, is my priority. I've heard actually a lot of good stuff about Bocchi the Rock.
I have too, but I just don't know for me.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe if somebody... I've heard it, but not from like a person I trust.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like it's like, oh, people really like it. But I'm like, yeah, but I don't like people. So like it has to be a person that I know.
Like I said, that's why it's not like super... like number one on my list, because I'm like I have the same thing, like very enthusiastic, but I'm not sure I trust everybody. That's so it's like something that's on my radar. I feel like Yuri Deco I have like solid proof that I like. Bocchi the Rock is just like maybe something I'm like, yeah, let me try an episode or two and see. How about you, Kate, other than Cyberpunk?
I feel, well, like I said, I had heard kind of the same thing about Bocchi the Rock, because I was just like, this looks like chaos and I can't watch it. So that one is kind of on there. I think that's basic, and Cyberpunk, because mm-hmm. But I feel like there are a couple of movies that I know came out. And I haven't heard, like, really anything about them, but they're movies, so it's like, oh, I just haven't had time to, like, watch them.
Oh, two things I just thought of. I really want to see One Piece Movie Red. I heard everything that seems like it was pretty enjoyable. And once again, another thing I thought we were going to watch together. I'm kind of curious to watch Raven of the Inner Palace.
I finished that.
And your opinion?
I really enjoyed it.
So
I don't think it's like, it's not like a great show that like would make it onto like my best of list. It's a Kate show that Kate liked. Like, so would watch. And if they ever made more of it, which I feel like they probably won't, I think this was kind of a, you know, kind of just like a, it's not like it's well animated or like amazing in its production or anything.
Or you heard that it became super popular and everybody was talking about.
Yeah. So I doubt that they'll make any more of it, but I think the novels are licensed in English. Like, I liked it.
It seemed enjoyable.
Yeah, that's what I felt that it was.
I feel like it's one of those things where, because I've occasionally just been like, I remember liking a few episodes of this. I should probably go back and see if I would enjoy it more. It's definitely there on my list.
All right, I want to know, yeah, I love asking the group, yeah, what should we go back and watch? I love that as a question. So what's the 2022 show that maybe we didn't watch that we should go watch? Let us know in the Discord. And that wraps up 2022 for us. So next month, we will be talking about the new anime season. So the first animes of 2023.
Which we should start watching.
Oh, shit. Okay, well, we'll get on that. And yeah, let us know all of your favorites. So see you next month, everybody.